In all three Sundays of, in all three seasons, that is, we have a three-year cycle of readings, and in every cycle, the Lenten readings are the same. That is, always the first Sunday of Lent is a temptation narrative from Matthew, Mark, or Luke, and always the second Sunday is the transfiguration narrative from Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And they play off each other, and that's what I want to talk about today. Most scholars, or at least a great number of scholars, believe that this transfiguration vision, whatever it was, may have been a kind of post-Easter experience, which was then retrojected back into the history of Jesus. But it doesn't make much difference because the significance of his vision is the same. Jesus appears wearing dazzling white clothes, his face brilliantly illuminated, and that was the standard description of what life was to be for all of us at the end time, the eschaton. That is, when God finally intervenes to conclude the human enterprise on earth, we will all be transformed into that fashion. The resurrection, of course, was itself understood by the Jews to be an end time event. That is, that's why Paul and all the early Jesus people believed that the end was going to come very quickly, because if God had raised this man, that's the beginning of the end. So we're talking, therefore, about what we somewhat misleadingly call heaven, or the end time. So what's that all about? It's not harps and clouds and all that paraphernalia that a kind of infantile imagination has come up with. But rather, we're to take our cue precisely from the temptation narrative as to what heaven is about. It is the restoration of God's primal intent in making us human beings. And you remember from the temptation narrative last week, it was not good for human beings to be alone. When they were together, they were naked and unashamed. They had absolutely nothing to conceal from each other. There are several ways of getting at this. One is to say that the end time is the restoration of absolute justice among us human beings, whose life is marked more profoundly by injustice, I think, than by justice. I mean, if you look at not just our own biographies, but at the history of the world at large, how many people on this planet had justice for their lives? Food to eat, decent air to breathe, a roof over their head. Those are fundamental elements of justice, huh? But also it means that when there is justice among us, we are able to be naked and unashamed with each other. And I think this takes a massive effort of imagination, even to try to conceive such a situation. I mean, we are wrapped so tightly around with our wariness, our contempt, our distrust, our disappointment, our fear of each other, even in the most intimate relationships. How much we have to clothe ourselves with fig leaves of one sort or another, some kind of construction from an untruth that we present to each other. And so what we're talking about is this astonishing vision of our destiny as human beings, that with God being all in all, as Paul will say, we all become transparent to each other because we are transparent to God. We know ourselves as we are known, and we will know each other as we are known. I can't get my head around it. I know the word. I know what the words mean. I can imagine that. I can use that as a kind of heuristic device to see how much my life is self-enclosed and self-protective and self-defensive among with everybody else. But to say that there's this radical availability to everybody else. so that I see everybody as they really are in their own lovability, and they see me. That lovability which is so occluded through our lives by our disappointments, by our failures, by our distrust, by our cowardice, by our dishonesty. So it's an amazing vision. And so they want to say, okay, this is where human beings fell. This is what has defiled the world. But this is what we're called to. And Jesus, as the letter to the Hebrews puts it, is the pioneer of our faith. The one who goes before. So that's what the Transfiguration vision is all about. This anticipation of the end. When we'll be fully together, and not just as a bit of rhetoric or political blather, but in reality. It takes a long time, I think, even to begin to imagine that destiny. But there we have it. And that's what's being offered to us here. So what do we do with the next 4 weeks of Lent? Well, if you think about the temptation narrative and where we are afraid of each other and hide from each other, to this end point we're totally open, thanks be to God, working through Jesus to each other, how do you get to there from here? And therein lies the next 4 Sundays of Lent, the cross. The cross is precisely the process of recognizing our self-enclosedness, of actively working to dissolve that. We're going to meet each other in God. So, for the next 4 Sundays, I hope to propose different manifestations of the cross in our lives. The cross, parenthetically, we have trivialized, I'm afraid, at least in my experience in the church. The cross is hangnails or psoriasis or the unfairness of a headache or even the flu. That had nothing to do with the cross. That had everything to do with just having a body. Let's put together a material piece of it. The cross is this monumental effort to move beyond where we are to this astonishing position to which we're called in the vision of the Transfiguration.